who you called, when you called them, where you made the call. From that type of data collected in mass can reveal an awful lot of information about you.
The United States of America has become the United States of surveillance, says former FBI agent Mike German, just one of many ex-intelligence agents fighting back against the eyes and ears of the NSA.
You have Democratic presidents, you have Republican presidents. We all want to know what everybody else is doing. Spying is in the American gene pool.
It may have started in our genes, but as Press TV reveals, it's become a big business.
It turns the whole world against us.
The battle is on between a government that believes it has a right to spy on everyone and a world that is fighting back.
This is the truth. This is what's happening. You should decide whether we need to be doing this.
America's surveillance state.
We're here at the International Spy Museum in Washington, D.C. There are more spies here in D.C. than anywhere else in the world, so it's appropriate that we have this institution that really tells the complete story of espionage internationally.
When you travel to America's capital, Washington, D.C., if you can afford the admission, you can visit this International Spy Museum to relive the glories of the Cold War, complete with an exhibit on James Bond's evil adversaries. What you won't find is any reference to the current surveillance spying scandal.
The key aspects of espionage, that deception, that art of hiding information and disclosing information, really has remained the same.
And this is the capital of it, Washington, D.C.
Absolutely. Washington, D.C. is certainly the capital of espionage.
And the capital of deception in many ways.
Yes, absolutely.
Outside of Washington, in the Maryland suburbs, is the capital of that capital.
Merge onto K-9 Road, then your destination will be on the left.
The National Security Agency. This super-secret spy agency is not hospitable to tourists or most reporters who want to know what's happening now. We found that out when we were told we were not welcome at this heavily guarded federal facility. It has more than 30,000 employees, 32 miles of roads across 325 acres. We were threatened with a $500 fine for even asking about entering, although later the NSA gave us some footage. These students at a nearby local university were threatened with arrest for photographing an NSA building on their campus where whistleblower Ed Snowden once worked. NSA used to stand for Never Say Anything. This has changed because the surveillance state is in the news every day. Americans know it exists, but few really understand what it does and how. To find out, also, don't bother visiting the NSA website.
I'm often asked the question, what's more important, civil liberties or national security? It's a false question. It's a false choice. At the end of the day, we must do both.
You will only find out what they want you to know, that they are here to defend and protect you. They claim to be accountable in legal and moral terms.
We have to find the way to ensure that we support the entirety of the Constitution. That was the intention of the framers of the Constitution. That's what we do on a daily basis at the National Security Agency.
How true is that? We will investigate the claims and the realities in this episode of America's Surveillance State. What does the NSA do? It's a simple question, but because it's a top secret agency, a clear understanding has been hard to grasp. The agency is not required to release even non-classified information. On November 6, 1998, NSA for the first time declassified this organization chart of its operations directorate. You'll note some of this document is blacked out. It also only shows part of NSA's mission, including military support, intelligence oversight and policy, global issues and military production, and here, what they call collection operations. That's another word for electronic eavesdropping. It has become well known, but also controversial, because of all the data that is being collected and stored.
You have this incredible advances in technology that enable much more collection than ever was possible, and an increase of secrecy around the program. So it's very unclear still, not just what the government is doing, but what legal authorities it thinks allows it to do what it's doing.
Mike German, a veteran undercover FBI agent, knows surveillance techniques because he's used them.
It's an enormous problem for the government to know more about the people than the people know about what the government's doing. And what we've seen since the terrorist attacks of 9/11 is that a lot of the legal restraints that kept the government in check after a previous era of abuse were relaxed or removed completely in many cases.
The NSA was created secretly 60 years ago, not by Congress, but by the president, as a tool of the Cold War. But it always got less attention than the spooks, spies, and assassins who built the CIA's mystique as the invulnerable and omnipotent overthrower of governments and silencer of America's enemies. CIA scandals, including a recently leaked document detailing its role in torture and abuse, became well known, even as the NSA's better funded operations were downplayed because they were considered the province of super nerds, boys with toys like satellites, cables, and supercomputers. NSA hires more mathematicians than any other federal agency. Ray McGovern was in the CIA and rose to become a briefer of presidents. He worked for 7 presidents and 9 directors of Central Intelligence. He says he joined because he believed in the mission.
The ethos of intelligence work that attracted me was symbolized by the scriptural quote on the foyer of the CIA's new building. It was new in 1963 when I came on under John Kennedy, and it said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free." Okay, and I said, looked at that, and I remembered the constant dictum of my Irish grandmother: "Be truthful and honest, and then you won't give a damn what anyone says about you." Okay, and so I looked at it, and I said, "Well, Grandma, if that's true, you know, no pun intended, it's going to be a good place to work."
Eventually, like many professionals, he became disillusioned, retiring early. As a member of the intelligence community, he came to know the NSA's work well.
NSA did play a role. We learned things about the Soviet Union we never would have known before. It was done with judiciousness, and above all, it was done with respect to what they call the First Commandment out there at Fort Meade, NSA. Thou shalt not collect information, eavesdrop on Americans without a court warrant. That was the rule. That was the First Commandment. When Cheney came in, he said, they called General Hayden, who was head of NSA at the time, he said, "General Hayden, I know about that First Commandment at NSA. I know about that. Forget about it. Forget about it." And that was before 9/11.
So the decision for the NSA to begin collecting information on everyone and everything started with an order from above.
Oh, sure. Yeah, it was Dick Cheney and George Bush. The other thing, of course, that needs to be said is that the technology allowed that for the first time. And so when you had the sort of the rubric here, collect everything, which clearly is their motto now, collect everything. And then they say, well, you know, what people say, what about the problem with the haystack, finding the needle in the haystack? Well, the answer to that, they say, is you got to make sure you had the whole haystack.
This NSA document leaked by Ed Snowden describes their collection program this way: collect it all, sniff it all, know it all, process it all, exploit it all. NSA whistleblower Russ Tice says the agency is still downplaying its collecting process to make it sound harmless.
They're lying about what they have and their capabilities and what they're doing. They're archiving everything. Their idea is, we'll archive everything. We're going to take everything. And then they say, oh, well, we don't collect. Well, then, you know, they're lying, of course, but their definition of collect is to have some human analyst look at this email or listen to this phone call or whatever. Well, of course, that's nonsense. They've collected it, and they have it for an indefinite period of time. But they're not going to call it collected until someone looks at it. And of course, there's no way we have enough humans on this planet to listen to every, you know, communication that happens.
They are also not talking about how collecting everything makes it harder to produce relevant intelligence.
Is there a danger of you know, valuable information getting lost because so much is collected? I mean, this is what they said after 9/11. You know, they had information about these hijackers, but nothing was done because there was so much information they couldn't figure out who to go after.
And the Boston bombers and the underwear bombers and the shoe bombers, all these things, you know, because they've, you know, they say they're, you got to look for a needle in the haystack. Well, you know, part of my job in that world was to make sure to first to limit the size of the haystack. That way you don't have as much hay to go through before to look for the needle. And what they're doing is just dumping on more hay. They're you don't have a haystack anymore. You have a mountain of hay to go through.
State surveillance today is now cheap, it's undetectable, it's pervasive, and it's available at the click of a mouse. As a result, entire populations, rather than individuals, now live under constant surveillance.
Whistleblower Ed Snowden went through that hay and saw a lot of disturbing images, wars, and abuses. As a network administrator, he had access to all the databases and soon realized that he had the power to spy on anyone. In a video prepared for a televised debate, he explained.
Despite policy, I, as an NSA analyst sitting at my desk, had the technical authority to wiretap anyone, from a federal judge to the president of the United States, without getting out of my chair, as long as I had a private email address. And that's not a boast. In fact, some of these cases have already happened. In 2009, the New York Times reported that an NSA analyst used our state surveillance infrastructure to improperly access Bill Clinton's email. And other NSA workers have used state surveillance to spy on their lovers, ex-girlfriends, and other individuals who are obviously not suspected of any crime at all or any kind of wrongdoing. It's important to note that none of those individuals were ever charged with crimes. And we have to ask ourselves, why is that?
Journalist Glenn Greenwald has now released some of Snowden's documents in his new book that confronts the NSA head on.
The same rhetoric is constantly invoked, which is if you shine a light on what we in political power are doing in a way that we haven't authorized you to do, you're going to have blood on your hands. I mean, there's an obvious irony to being accused by a U.S. general who served in Iraq, of all places, of having blood on your hands or resulting, causing the death of innocent people. Nobody could ever surpass Keith Alexander and his fellow generals and their ability to do that.
What we've seen is expansion of what we call secret law, where they're either working under authorities that the American public doesn't know about, or even worse, there is a law in the books, but they're interpreting it in a way that an objective reading of that law wouldn't ordinarily allow.
The NSA in the hot seat. Documents leaked by Edward Snowden show that the NSA may have been spying on Chancellor Angela Merkel. An old mobile phone number she used is listed in those documents. Germany not happy.
Soon, thanks to the Snowden disclosures and media investigations, we found out that the NSA was collecting intel on 122 foreign leaders, even U.S. allies like the Chancellor of Germany and the President of Brazil. 35 leaders had their calls monitored.
For Germany, it is unacceptable that the mobile phone of our federal chancellor may have been subject to surveillance activities by our American partners. For us, spying on close friends and partners is totally unacceptable.
The NSA speaks of its work in neutral and non-threatening language, using terms like collection, telephony, metadata. What does that mean? We asked former FBI undercover agent Mike German.
I mean, you would normally think in the terms of the Fourth Amendment that any time the government is collecting information about you, gathering it, putting it in a government database, that would be collection. But often the way the authorities that govern government surveillance are interpreted, sometimes the acquisition of information versus the collection of information are two different things, and they're only considering it collected once a human being has actually put eyes on it and processed the information.
In May 2014, former NSA Director Michael Hayden shocked a Washington audience when he said that the NSA uses metadata to kill people, a reference to NSA providing intelligence to military units using drones to assassinate people the Pentagon and the White House consider enemies. Hayden quickly backtracked, saying, "We don't do that in the U.S.
Okay. We kill people based on metadata. But that's not what we do with this metadata." Okay.
Thankfully.
Wow, I was working up a sweat there for a second.
Hayden, now working with a former Homeland Security chief, was also embarrassed in October 2013 when he was overheard by a fellow train passenger who began tweeting the content of his confidential phone conversation. Using a secret FISA court to do its bidding, the NSA pressed the government to order phone companies like Verizon, AT&T, Sprint, and Nextel to turn over a massive number of records. Later, we learned about a program called PRISM. Here's the secret NSA document that shows what it does to collect internet data. Virtually everything we do and say online from all the big companies.
Well, they're collecting everything they can collect, and that is everything. They've been doing that without any adult supervision. The White House, the committees in Congress who are supposed to be exercising oversight, right? They're the overlook committees, not the oversight committees, and they're complicit in that. Not only that, but you have these 15 faux judges from the FISA court, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act court.
Faux means phony, right?
Yeah, F-A-U-X, yeah. And so what you have, Danny, and this is important, the first time in my life, you have the executive, you have important people in the legislative branch, the heads of the intelligence committees, and you have 15 judges on the FISA court, all sort of enmeshed, all complicit in this gross violation of the Fourth Amendment. And you start out asking about NSA, what it stands for. Now it stands for no such amendment. No such amendment.
Just to summarize, what is NSA? NSA is the largest, most costly, and most technologically sophisticated spy organization the world has ever known. It filters millions of phone calls and emails an hour. It has computers programmed to watch for hundreds of thousands of names. Its computers cost tens of millions and carry strange names like Black Widow. They run at special speeds most of us have never heard of, hundreds of teraflops that can lead to hundreds of trillions of operations per second. NSA headquarters is four times bigger than the U.S. Capitol.
I love the place. I went into the military and the Air Force when Ronald Reagan was president. I was full throttle. We were fighting the Cold War against the evil Soviet Union, and I was a full believer. I mean, I was gung ho, and you know, I'd be the guy that would get in early and stay late, and you know, I wanted to do my job, and I loved the place.
Russ Tice typified the NSA mentality. A space engineer, he believed in their clandestine mission and was totally dedicated. He worked in super secret, so-called black world programs until he discovered that the satellites were not just spying on America's enemies.
In one of these programs, I found out that we were using using satellite technology to spy on American citizens.
Spy on American citizens.
Yes.
Not supposed to do that, right?
No. In NSA, every 6 months, you go through a program where they drill it into your head, we call it UCID 18, that you will not spy on Americans. And for one incident of spying on Americans, you can go to jail for 5 years. For one incident. And they drill that into your head, and we all believe that we will never do this to our fellow citizens.
William Binney was a 40-year veteran of NSA who also went off the reservation because he saw the agency straying from its job. He was interviewed by Democracy Now!
The Congress and the administration have been fed by the
by the intelligence community what I call technobabble. In other words, they're being bamboozled into thinking a certain way, that they have to do this in order to get terrorists, and that's simply false.
Speaking of terrorists, the most dramatic NSA story we heard came from Thomas Drake, who became an executive at NSA on the day of a terrorist attack, September 11th, 2001.
Almost 3,000 people were murdered. The workforce knew that this was not just a passing crisis. The workforce knew that we had utterly failed the nation. We under the Constitution, the preamble of the Constitution, government has two primary responsibilities. One is to provide for the common defense. The other is to provide for the general welfare. Here we utterly failed. We had not kept people out of harm's way. We had not protected the nation.
There was a feeling of guilt there because the NSA had information on some of the men who skyjacked those planes that were flown into buildings, but they did not share it with other agencies. Thomas Drake became an eyewitness to how the agency changed.
So I became eyewitness to NSA unchaining itself with the approval and the mandate of the White House, unchaining itself from the Fourth Amendment. Literally, and entering into a mass surveillance regime, the likes that history has never seen before.
As he became critical of the agency's failures, he became a whistleblower and faced years in prison for going public with NSA failures. Unlike Edward Snowden, he did not leak masses of documents.
That was one of the fundamental rules, whether it was oral communication, whether it was written, electronic, or later on, even in hard copy, it was all unclassified, period.
What's not appreciated is that Snowden has been as careful in assembling information as he has been in disseminating information.
If I had just wanted to harm the U.S., you know, that you could shut down the surveillance system in an afternoon. But that's not my intention. And I think for anyone making that argument, they need to think, if they were in my position, and you know, you live a privileged life, you're living in Hawaii, in paradise, and making a ton of money, what would it take to make you leave everything behind?
Thanks to what we've learned from Snowden's disclosures, it seems like all of us have been reduced to the data we convey.
When you engage in an electronic transaction, whether it's with your cell phone, with a regular traditional landline phone, with your credit card, with your computer, the transaction itself, the content of the communications is called content. You know, if you buy something at the store with your credit card, what you bought is considered content. But there are all sorts of electronic trails left, like crumbs, that often have a tremendous amount of very detailed information about you, particularly when it's gathered in mass. For example, who you called, when you called them, how long you were on the call with them, where you made the call from. That type of data collected in mass can reveal an awful lot of information about you.
In May 2014, Washington finally took legal action against cyber spying by China, not the United States, even as some of the Snowden documents revealed that economic espionage is also in NSA's portfolio. The Chinese and U.S. critics laughed at what they called hypocrisy.
The United States deliberately made up facts, using the excuse of so-called stealing of secrets online to indict five Chinese military officials. This has seriously violated the basic principles of international relations and damaged Chinese-U.S. cooperation and mutual trust.
Americans think it's okay if we spy on foreigners, but it's not okay if we spy on Americans, as if, you know, the rest of the world has no right to privacy at all.
We are more worried about Al-Qaeda than, I think, any nation state as a threat to American lives. But nonetheless, I think we have to rein in an agency that has the ability to spy on any innocent citizen with impunity of any country in the world. I mean, when the world becomes the NSA's panopticon, even with a fig leaf of privacy around Americans, that to me does seem unacceptable, and it turns the whole world against us.
Coming up next, the NSA and the press, how spying and intimidation has led America's mainstream media to push back and publish leaks and disclosures that would have once been unthinkable. The press versus the NSA, coming up next in this documentary series on America's surveillance state.